Welcome. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is Dan Leftwich, an evolutionary lawyer, speaking with us from Boulder. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks, Will.
How many evolutionary lawyers are there?
Well, it's hard to say. Since I made this transition to create what I call evolutionary law, I've been in contact with, I'd say, dozens of lawyers that are roughly, you know, aligned with what is now known as Earth jurisprudence, and so I would call them evolutionary lawyers. But and there are a number of other conscious lawyers about the impact of their actions on the planet. So it's more than most people would think.
And yet there's not a large number. There are just a few of you who are breaking this trail right now.
That's correct. But every day I get inquiries or comments or contact with people who are interested in this at all levels, prospective law students, people in universities, and in the legal profession itself.
Tell us about the point at which you made this decision.
In 2007, I was going through a real compression. I was a plaintiff's class action antitrust litigator, litigating cases with my small law firm, my former law partners in Washington, D.C., and seeing everything that was happening on the planet. It appeared to be the darkest of circumstances. And as I tried harder and harder to map out how it was going to work, both in my family, in my profession, in my life circumstances, at some point, I just surrendered and could not figure it out. And as soon as I did that, all kinds of new things started coming into my existence, including Amos Berry, the great eco-philosopher and virtual organization, the Oneness University. And in that confluence of spiritual and professional transitions, it just became clear to me that I needed to allow other forces to determine what was going to happen. I just needed to begin what was in my heart as far as what I needed to do. And evolutionary law came out of that process.
And you actually feel like you're now more in alignment with your purpose.
Absolutely. It became really clear to me soon after I made the decision to just begin, just send signals to the universe and start making contact with whoever I could about Earth jurisprudence. Thomas Berry called on the legal profession to create a new form of jurisprudence that would, as he put it, articulate the conditions for the integral functioning of the Earth process. That was Earth jurisprudence. And as soon as I started making connections in that area, it was very clear to me that despite the fact that I didn't have a real background in environmental law or Earth jurisprudence as it might seem, it was totally aligned with my 40-plus years of consciousness work and how I viewed the transition that the law needed to take as I was doing it myself before I really understood what Earth jurisprudence was.
So shifting away from a human-centered view of the world favored your synchronicity?
Yes. From a personal level, my attempts to control outcomes, to manage outcomes, was having negative effects on my, not just my professional life, but my personal circumstances as well. And as soon as I just surrendered more to the universe, really, as far as how outcomes would come about, synchronicity became the dominant feature of my life and still is, really.
So say more about this sense of trusting what you're doing, simply allowing what needs to be to happen.
Well, my involvement with my spiritual transition led me to see how all the events, the major events of my life, had led me to this point, including my background as a litigator. You know, why I learned the skills that I did, it became clear to me that that was to meet a purpose that was to come. And I began to see how, I began to synchronize my path, right? To see how it was all leading to this transition.
And where it's led you now is to working with the rights of nature. Say a little bit about that.
Earth jurisprudence has one of its fundamental principles is that all beings in nature have rights. Thomas Berry said the most absurd thing in modern times is the idea that only humans have rights. The tree has rights. The river has rights.
Yes.
They don't have the same rights as humans, but they have rights. The right to be, the right to habitat, and the right to fulfill their role in the great community of existence. So a tree's rights are specific to its function in the natural community and the role that it plays in nourishing the entire natural community. So that's where rights for nature, you know, came about in the earth jurisprudence sphere, really. And so it's one aspect that I felt like was completely necessary to bring the rights of humanity and nature into balance. We're not separate from nature, but as we see it, we are separate, and we have dominion over nature. And so my role has been to try to show people that elevating the legal rights of nature to a status equal to human rights is an important part of Earth jurisprudence.
We've had some guests on this program, Thomas Lindsay and Mari Margill from the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, who are also working on the rights of nature. Tell us how your approach is different and why you've taken this direction.
Well, first I encountered Thomas and Mari Margill several years ago as I was embarking on this journey and came into contact with Thomas Berry's work. Thomas Berry was influential in Thomas Lindsay's development of these philosophies as well. Their approach has been, and I completely honor how they've brought people into greater awareness of the rights of nature. It's been an amazing thing. Their approach has been to frame the rights of nature in the context of what they call community rights ordinances and community bill of rights, which expresses the rights of self-governance, democratic rights of local communities to control their own governance. And it's been in the context of pushing back against oil and gas companies, really corporate dominance of local communities. And in the process, they've been really educating people about how rights for nature fit in the context of community rights, which really revolve around individual rights, human rights, constitutional rights, inalienable rights. So that's been invaluable in educating people about the rights of nature. My role has been, especially living in Boulder, where rights for nature is not a foreign concept to people in Boulder. Environmental protection is a highly valued element of not just citizens in Boulder, but local government. So I have taken a focus on rights for nature on its own, right? To try to educate people that rights for nature deserve their own constituency. Because by building that constituency for rights of nature, not totally separate from, but not interspersed with the community rights, the human rights aspects, it tends to give it greater power. If an ordinance that is based entirely on the rights of nature is enacted, then I want there to be a constituency built up around that so that people understand the importance of how nature's right can help support human rights.
This is William Evans. I'm speaking with Dan Leftwich, an evolutionary lawyer from Boulder. The city of Longmont is trying to protect themselves right now. Are you involved with them or in helping in any way?
Yes, I am. I'm a supporter of that, the initiative that the residents of Longmont are attempting to ban hydraulic fracking by initiative. The city of Longmont, city council, has enacted regulations that go beyond the state government's rules governing how oil and gas development is to be done in Colorado. And so there's that battle going on, and I'm involved only at the level of advising people on how they can support the right to regulate fracking, apart from the merits of Longmont's own regulations, which are relatively weak in terms of how far they go. But nevertheless, they should have the right to regulate fracking. And then all separately, the initiative by the citizens of Longmont to ban fracking altogether in Longmont and to ban the storage of the wastewater that results from fracking in the city, that's an effort that I'm also involved with groups like Food and Water Watch and other local citizens groups. I'm a supporter, and I'm not a formal legal advisor.
But they're in a legal contest now with the state.
Well, yes. At the level of the city government's regulation of fracking, as soon as they enacted those regulations, the state filed suit to essentially preempt their right to do so. And I have sent some comments to Boulder County on its regulatory processes dealing with this preemption issue. So I'm paying attention and trying to educate people about the rights that they have to regulate and to govern their own local communities in relation to the state preemption powers. Preemption is not, there's no such thing as field preemption in Colorado, which means the state government does not have the power to preempt the field in this area. There is joint power to regulate oil and gas development and to regulate land use, which is highly important in this process. So how that's going to get worked out is an open question. And then, as I said, there's this separate initiative by Longmont citizens. Apart from what the city council did, Longmont citizens are saying they're asking people to vote for a total ban on fracking
right
in their jurisdiction.
We have a similar concern here in our locale. The ridge above Carbondale-Thompson Divide has already been leased. There's been very well-orchestrated grassroots efforts to buy them out and retire the leases, but so far we haven't had any joy out of that effort. I want to ask you a couple of other questions and then bring it into that local issue we're experiencing here. But part of the reason that there is a great deal of nourishment and fun for you in what you're doing is you've stepped into the greater flow of life, but you haven't dropped your paddle. You're guiding yourself in directions that make sense to you with this more panoramic view. Am I right? Is this altruistic, invisible current real for you?
Absolutely, it's real. As this is the process of letting go of the mind's desire to control direction, outcomes. You know, it's a process. You don't just drop it all of a sudden and then jump in the river and expect to survive. That's not how it works. You can try that, and that's part of the process, because you learn that you can only go so fast. And so what I've learned to do is it just gauge where I am in that process. There are times when I feel like, you know, I still need to hang on to the side, so to speak, or steer closer to the shore. And then other times where I'm really confident that I'm getting the signals from the process that I'm in the right direction. And the more I do that, the more I can let go and just allow the current to take me where I'm supposed to go. recognizing that I still have the paddle. Right? I can still reach out and steer out of the current. I can still, you know, go to the side if I need to. But more and more, I'm learning that to trust that process, trust that the direction I'm in, the people that are coming in, are for the right purpose. And when there's somebody or some event that comes in that's not for the right purpose, I'm trusting more and more the signals that I'm receiving that tell me, nope, that's not right. I'm losing energy through that process. If I'm gaining energy through the process, I know I'm in the right direction.
We've been involved with this local issue for a number of years now, and the leases will expire next year. But we have one drilling company in particular, SG Interests of Houston, that are adamant that they will drill. That would be a tragedy to the air and water quality of this valley, which still is relatively healthy, although there was extensive coal mining and silver mining up both valleys. Do you have any suggestions for us? Having made the attempts we've had, there's a lot of community willingness, but we don't see the opening here because we're meeting resistance from the drilling company.
My suggestion is to elevate the conversation and elevate the awareness about the higher impact that's going on from this process. As long as this is just about the battle between local property rights and local economic impacts and even local environmental impact, it's on a playing field that corporate power dominates. But when you trigger this higher impulse, this evolutionary impulse, for people to see what's happening on the planet, this is one scene in a drama that is threatening the species. Okay? This is a threat to the planet. And when you do that, people see less to lose from just acting from their core integrity. Their focus gets clearer.
When you're dealing with entities that tell us it's totally safe to drill and frack, and that there will be no contamination of air or water, you know, there's a lack of integrity there that makes it challenging. Do you think we have a right to health in America today?
Absolutely. You have an inalienable right to health and well-being. You know, not just the constitutional right, which you have, right? In the Colorado Constitution, in the United States Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, you have inalienable rights to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Life involves a healthy habitat. Thomas Berry said those three rights that every being has, they come from existence. They come from nature itself. The right to be, the right to habitat. Okay? A right to life isn't worth much if the habitat that's necessary for life is not healthy. So these are inalienable rights. They're not granted or taken away by anyone.
Yeah, and I think this is the issue that is creating so much pushback across the country. And the gathering that happened October 23rd in Denver around this issue, and I see lots of angry mothers standing up to protect their children and their children's health.
Yes. Well, they should. And they're starting to see the bigger impact. This is a threat to their own family survival and well-being, but also the planet. In truth, it's all interconnected.
Yes, and we're risking the North American water supply with this.
Absolutely. There's a the impact on water is not just at the local point of where toxic chemicals get put into the water supply. Okay? The impact on water is global.
Yeah, water.
We're all tied together.
That's right. Water is one continuous circle. So you believe humans are going to evolve fast enough to survive?
I don't control outcomes. What I believe is that humans are capable of evolving quickly enough to not just survive, but to thrive, to go beyond sustainability, because that in itself is a limiting factor. Okay? If all we're trying to do is survive, then that's likely to be what we have available to us. We need to elevate our focus to, as Thomas Berry put it, the integral functioning of the Earth process. That's thrivability, in my view. Right? By elevating our intentions, we go beyond survival. We start to look for the conditions that will allow us to enter a truly, truly sustainable world.
And we innately have everything it takes to stand tall and speak the truth.
Oh, absolutely. This is, we're building on literally billions of years of evolution.
So it's going to take a large number of us standing tall collectively in Carbondale to affect the result and the evolutionary direction we want to go in a healthy way.
I would agree and disagree with that statement. I would agree that it's going to take a significant number of people who are in a position where they've let go of fear. They've let go of fear that the outcome won't be what they want. However, in that process, a very small number of people, conscious people, people who are aware of the higher significance of nature's role in their own processes, can impact many, many, many more people. Right? So this is just, honestly, it's just quantum physics. Right? That we're all interconnected. So it's not just the sheer number of people that will have the impact. It's the influence of consciousness from a relatively small number of people impacting on much wider scale.
And if we remember our connection to nature and we're in the flow, we can allow that need to control to be released and create the result that's best for all concerned.
That's right. That's where creativity comes from. The present moment has everything that we need. Everything that we need.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate your talking with us. I've been speaking with Dan Leftwich, an evolutionary lawyer from Boulder. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.